Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
O'Reilly Auto Parts' new Brake Mess Select Pro brand raises the bar for the best aftermarket domestic brake pads and rotors available. For vehicle-specific friction formulations, Quiet Tech noise-canceling shims, and stainless steel hardware, choose Brake Mess Select Pro. Professional-grade brakes from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Well, security expert and former Mexican policeman who knows everything about the cartels and all about the inner workings of Mexico comes back to enlighten us even more. So we'll talk to Ed in a second. First, I'll tell you about LegalZoom. Health and safety. Everyone's thinking about it these days. You want to keep your loved ones protected? LegalZoom, reliable way to set up the right estate plan without leaving your home. Do you need a last will and testament, or a living trust? How about an advanced health care directive? That's what Dr. Drew's been talking about this whole time. What's a power of attorney? I don't know. You got to check with LegalZoom. Don't try to figure out everything on your own. If you need to speak to an attorney, their independent attorney network is there to guide you and advise you all along the way. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, but so you don't have to worry about the expensive billable hours. It's LegalZoom, right, Dawson?
Take an important step for your family today. Go to LegalZoom.com and get started on a last will, living trust, or more. Or find out how you can speak to an attorney for advice on the right estate plan. LegalZoom, where life meets legal.
I'm your emotional support animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture.
My baseline, my factory default setting, is right. I can be very right or super right, but I'm never wrong.
Written and narrated by Adam Carolla.
So grab a seat, preferably a toilet seat, as reading about how our society is going down the shitter will be good reading for when you're on the shitter.
Pre-order it now at AdamCarolla.com.
Ed Calderon back on the show, security specialist, combatives instructor as well. Website, edsmanifesto.com. We like to talk to Ed about all things Mexico and drug cartels and that whole world, which is endlessly fascinating. Good to see you again, Ed.
Good to see you after the whole shutdown thing.
Yeah, I think the last time we were talking, we were kind of talking about Mexico and how it's affecting folks over there. You're born and raised in Tijuana, worked for Mexican Tijuana security. Was it a policeman? Would you just say policeman? Or what would be?
Yeah, I worked for the Mexican government. I did police work for the Mexican government. You know, that's kind of the title. Back then, there was no federales. It was not that.
What do we have? So it's like here, you could work for the sheriffs and you could be on the west side, or you could work for the Glendale Police Department or the Pasadena Police Department or what have you. Is it sort of, did they break it up that way there?
Yeah, yeah. There's three separate police groups out there. You can go to Tijuana and get stopped by the municipal police, and then you get let go and told, yeah, nobody's going to bother you. And then the state police will stop you a little further on down the road, and then you'll let go. And then you go down Rosarito, and the federal police will stop you, and they all will, you know, that's the three separate entities right there. And right now, with the way things are, right, the Army and the Mexican Marines are actually policing Tijuana right now, Mexico right now. They've been given policing powers by the current president. So
why?
Because the corruption, he's found out, again, like all past presidents, that most police units are corrupt at their core.
Is the Army not corrupt at their core?
Yes, it is. There's been many cases of corrupt Army officials. The only one that's kind of been kept relatively clean has been the Marina, or the basically the Mexican Marines. That's who the U.S. has bet on as far as the tip of the spear against the cartels. But like all units that down there, eventually, you know, somebody will guess the price on some of these people. And there have been cases of, you know, Marina units being caught helping the cartels, doing abductions for ransom. So it's a free-for-all.
You know, as I think about it, it's almost impossible. It's like, I'm going to screw this up because I don't know a lot about these days. But, like, let's say back in the day, you lived in a castle. You were the king, and he had a beautiful princess, a beautiful queen, right? And then you were gone a lot, and you didn't want guys fucking her. So you had to hire a bunch of eunuchs to hang out because you could trust them because, I don't know, they couldn't get a boner when they were drawing her bath. And I don't know if that's how they used eunuchs or not. You got to look it up, Max Pat. But what I'm saying is there's an inherent problem, which is you got this hot young queen, and any guy you bring in, no matter how great his intentions are, eventually he's going to get a boner and try to fuck the queen. And so whoever you bring in, as long as the drug cartels have that much money and you value your life as well, you're going to take the silver over the lead, as we always say, and they always say. So in a way, you almost need an outside entity who's not being paid and doesn't care about money and doesn't want money, who's not corruptible. I don't know how you can do it from within, because you say, well, they bought and paid for the police force, but they haven't bought and paid for the Marines. Yeah, but let the Marines police them for a few years and see if they don't get bought and paid for.
Yeah, so
is that an accurate statement?
Yes. Main thing is that it's a circle. Every 6 years, a new president comes in, thinks he has the best ideas to police Mexico, and he does the same exact thing. New police force, different uniforms, different names, and they eventually, well, they're turning into a corrupt group, and they're getting paid for, so let's put it in the army. And then the army goes in. The army doesn't know how to police a public, you know, public city, like a city. They don't know how to do the paperwork to put somebody in jail. So they have somebody, a high level cartel guy, that gets set free after he killed a bunch of people because they don't know how to do the paperwork. And it's just a circle. It's a circle.
Is there ever? And I don't know if you can answer this question or if you've ever studied this, but has there ever been a society that was very corrupted and worked on graft and payoffs and bribes and everything that undid themselves, you know what I mean, that went back to more of how Western Europe is or how we are in the United States?
I haven't seen anything like that in Latin America. The only thing that, you know, people like me from down there that would study and kind of look at was Prohibition, the Prohibition era United States, how there were gangsters rolling around with Tommy guns and shooting up banks and moving alcohol through some of the, you know, running alcohol into Chicago. And you kind of get a glimpse of what we are experiencing in Mexico right now when it comes to local police corruption. You had back then complacency with some of the local governments, how some of the police forces worked with certain mafia groups but not other mafia groups. So each mafia group had their own police forces on their bankroll. So you, in the United States, you had that. How that ended? Well, you know, Prohibition ended. That was probably a factor to that. And since it was a single, you know, basically alcohol, that was a single thing that that changed. You know, I'm not saying everything went, you know, everything turned out better afterwards, but, you know, things changed at a fundamental level.
Well, you were saying that the cartels are so diversified now that stopping fentanyl or just drugs, you know, in just the one thing, like alcohol, you couldn't just stop the one thing anymore.
Maybe that could have been the case back in the late 70s, maybe early 80s, as far as stopping it when it was growing. I think, you know, mob era, prohibition era, criminal groups kind of mirrored a lot of the, you know, people watch that narco series on Netflix and see how some of the Mexican cartels kind of came up. That's what they mirrored back then. Now they're diversified. Now they're transnational. Now they have people working with them at all levels, from real estate to, you know, chemical, to people moving things from China to Mexico, to extortion, pirated goods. They have their hands in everything. So it's not such an easy solution than just legalizing drugs, right? It doesn't even make sense for a place like Mexico that. With the COVID epidemic, it shows you that they couldn't handle all of a sudden having to treat now drug addiction down there. that can't handle the COVID epidemic down there. The hospitals are overrun most of these places.
Yeah, how is that affecting Mexico? Because we were talking before, it hadn't really taken hold. We're speculating that the folks got a little more sewer rat in their system and a little tougher immune system. What happened?
It is affecting some parts of Mexico, coincidentally. Tijuana is one of the ones that's been getting it the worst because of its connection with California. Mm-hmm. So most of the cases are cross-border cases, people coming in with the virus from the U.S., not the other way around like some people want to kind of claim. So the hospitals are kind of not fully overrun, but they're on the breaking point with people coming in sick. It's business as usual. It's hard to maintain small rules or shut down orders down there. Like the beaches are full, you know.
Right.
The only weird phenomenon that happened is that a beer was declared non-essential. So there's a drought of beer all over Mexico right now. I actually had to buy some Tecate beer, which is made traditionally an hour away from my hometown in San Diego, because there's no Tecate beer in Tecate, which is pretty mind-blowing.
Why? So have they done these stay-in and shelter-at-home orders and people have ignored
it? They did it for the first 2 weeks, and then they realized that we don't have stimulus checks heading to people down there. There is no social net that's going to help out the people that engage in some of this, you know, alternative commerce down there. Basically, people that live off the day to day by selling their tacos on a taco stand or tortillas. You know, it's just not comparable to the U.S. So people had to go back out, basically, open rebellion to some of these rules, and people had to just go back out and work again.
Does what the current administration in Mexico? What do you think of him?
He's an open leftist. Has openly said he's pro Maduro regime. You know, there's pictures of him. With some all of your not friends of the U.S. as far as global wise. So he's a leftist, populist president. Right now, his approval numbers with his handling of the COVID epidemic are very, very low. His approval numbers as far as his handling of we're going through the most violent time in our history during his presidency.
What is the election cycle and or the rules? I don't know.
Every 6 years, there's no re-elections.
No re-elections.
No re-elections.
Six is your max.
Six max, no re-elections. He's working on changing that, by the way, right now, which is kind of worrying.
So it's kind of interesting because it's right in the middle of ours, in that we will guarantee a four, but you're not guaranteed eight in a weird way. Guaranteed six is an eight, but it's a sort of compromise that some would take and some wouldn't, I'm assuming. But I keep kind of thinking about the end game. Like I keep kind of thinking like, you know, I grew up in SoCal. I used to go to Tijuana a lot. I went on many sort of Rosarita and beyond, like kind of Baja beach trips. For people who haven't been there, Baja is this incredible coastline, and the water's great, and the food's great, and the people are great, and it just seems like such a waste in a way that country. And also, I've worked with so many Hispanic guys because I work in the construction field in SoCal, and that's like all you work with. And I don't want to wax poetic, but I just mean hardworking, humble, kind of basic guys, like regular guys who kind of like the simple things. And I'm attracted to those guys. I don't like the highfalutin guys. And I know everyone does that shit where they go, I don't like all that. I like the quiet, whatever. Yeah, you're walking the fucking red carpet every 10 minutes. But I like these like dudes. And I've found these guys to be consistent and kind of centered and kind of good salt of the earth kind of guys. It's sad that the country's so fucked up. Like it could be, it could be this great thing. Like, we should be going into Tijuana and going down to Rosarita every 5 times a year. You should pack up your pickup truck with longboards and mini bikes and go down and camp it on the beach there.
I get complaints all the time on my social media platforms because I said, Ed, you're from Mexico. Why are you bad mouthing your country? Why are you talking all these negative things about your country? Why not talk about the positives? Well, I was a janitor in my country. I wasn't a tourist advisor. I didn't, I wasn't a beach inspector. I wasn't a hotel inspector. I was a janitor, basically. I took out the garbage down there. So that's what I got to see. And that's what I can share as far as my opinion.
You took out the garbage in terms of the criminal.
Yeah, I worked at a street level, I got my hands dirty. My nose was broken by some of these people. I was shot at by some of these people. That was my experience. There are beautiful places down there. Yeah, I've had this experience once. I was talking to some friends about it. I went to the 28th parallel that divides Baja into Baja Sur and Baja Norte, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lady there, and she was ashamed that all she had to give us to eat was lobster and egg burritos. She was like, that's all I have. I'm sorry. She apologized. She kept apologizing. And, we saw how much they cost. And, it's beautiful, dangerous, weird freedom down in Baja, which there's something to be said about that dangerous freedom. When I say dangerous freedom, I mean you can have a party down there all night. Next day, the cops will show up and they'll keep it down, and then you'll pay them off and they'll leave. And, it's cool freedom in a way, but those small rules don't get followed and the big ones don't get followed. And then it's everybody for themselves, which in the end is what, Mexico's has turned into. Everybody's for themselves. The whole social structure kind of goes to the wayside when people don't follow those small rules. The big ones don't matter anymore. That's why the army comes by and, the cartel wins, that type of stuff.
Yeah. I remember just sitting in the back of a pickup truck, just driving on dirt roads, lighting M80s off a cigarette and just throwing it to truck behind us just for jokes, drinking a beer. And it always kind of struck me, which is, well, the rules are no real rules, so you get to do this. On the other hand, you guys are going to sleep on the beach tonight and somebody could come up and take your truck. So that's the downside of the no rules part of it. But just going through little villages and trying to think of that place you reminded me when you said lobster breakfast burritos. There's some place right outside of Rosarita. It's like a pier that has
Puerto Nuevo.
Probably just Puerto they Nuevo. Just bring over huge.
It's just
piles,
lobster.
Lobster and big piles of tortillas and butter. Yeah, you just put it right in the middle of the table.
It's a middle. That's I went to the East Coast recently, and I had lobster, Maine lobster.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
No, it wasn't as good as this stuff.
No, lobster in Mexico gets deep fried in pig lard.
Yeah.
And you get the flour tortillas and the handmade beans and the rice and a beer, and you're sitting on the beach eating it. And for some reason, I think that's way better.
There's something amazing about this, as I recall, was a long kind of pier that went out and big tables, and everyone would kind of share it.
That's at Puerto Nuevo. Right now, changes as far as expenses go. It's pretty safe. But you can go down there and have a lobster dinner for about $50.
Yeah, it was great, and surfing on the beach and everything else. But so I keep thinking, like, when are we going to turn this tide? Or do we get to the point where, like, the cartels become the government?
Well, they are the government in some places. That's the thing. Some places, with this COVID epidemic, there's a bunch of pictures going on online of these cartels actually distributing aid to the people that are affected by the shutdown, with one of El Chapo's daughters distributed handout food with El Chapo's picture on it. And the government is nowhere to be seen. Guadalajara's New Generation Cartel distributing things.
We're looking at it. Yeah.
Some Northwestern cartels distributing their wares, and they actually make these high production videos of them. They seem like a political campaign ad, mm-hmm. where these guys in ski masks and AKs are just handing food to the elderly and stuff like that. So they are they're winning the hearts and minds side of the war when it comes to the government. Something happens there, they don't call the cops, they call them. And they come out and they'll get the guy that's stealing there and they'll, you know, beat him with a board or worse.
Well, you know, it's going to sound a little rough, but at some point, the people are going to have to not tolerate it. And as long as the people tolerate it, like, we talk all the time about how this country is racist, but we're really not. And it's because we won't tolerate it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they go, there's these Klan members and the president's like, he's a Klan member. And it's like, we won't tolerate it. It's not to say that it can't happen or doesn't exist. But what I'm saying, like, in general, they're just things we will not embrace. We won't embrace. You're not allowed in this country to marry your daughter. Why? Because we won't tolerate it. And we won't tolerate the Klan in any numbers that mean anything at any time. We won't tolerate a lot of stuff. Somehow, at some point, the citizens of Mexico have to not tolerate this. I don't know that you're going to change it any other way.
Two observations. There is the vestiges of what once was the right to bear arms in Mexico. That's one thing. So that's people look at me sometimes when I talk about Second Amendment, how beautiful it is to have it in some places in the United States, not all. Mexicans, a group of people roll up to your farm with AK-47s and you don't have a rock to throw at them.
Right.
You get held up on the roadside and then the cops come over after you get held up and it turns out the cops work for the robbers and they're back for your ATM PIN number so they can go empty out your...
Right.
So that's one side of it. Also, the other side of it is that is the normal for Mexico in some places. They don't remember a time before.
Mm.
So that's the normal.
Right.
Recently, there was this very infamous case of a high-level Sinaloa cartel member that was captured on his way to Amsterdam 7 years ago. The guy had an Instagram account and posted pictures of him with Ferraris driving down, Paris, Paris, and he had a video of him and Paris Hilton at a Manny Pacquiao event. This guy's the head of the biggest Sicario group for the Sinaloa cartel back then. And he's living life and posting the stuff on Instagram, blurring out his face. Probably not the smartest thing. He got caught in Amsterdam, right? Put in jail, let go a few weeks back by the U.S. government under supervised house arrest.
By the U.S. government?
By the U.S. government.
Let out of jail in Mexico?
In the U.S.
Oh, in the U.S.
He was extradited from Amsterdam.
Extradited from Amsterdam to the U.S.?
U.S., held for 7 years. Nobody knows what happened. He probably turned into a witness. Who knows? He was let out under supervised house arrest. And he escaped, of course. He left his, thing behind. He left. He went to Mexico, crossed into Tijuana, probably met up with some of his family members, and he went all the way back to Sinaloa because, the desperate usually go back home.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they threw a big party for him.
Is it Jose Rodrigo Gamboa?
Yep, the El Chino Anthrax.
Thank you, Max Bannock. Yes, go ahead.
There's a few really, that guy should have a movie made out of him. It's a pretty interesting guy. He goes back to Sinaloa. It turns out the Sinaloa cartel is aware of all his information that he's probably provided to people. The rumor is that they found a tracking chip on him put in by, probably the U.S. government. He got killed with his sister and the sister's husband, and they were left outside of Sinaloa in a car wrapped in a blanket after they basically shot all of his house where he was staying at and dragged them out. Now, the reaction of the citizenry when they saw this wasn't that of, good, they got this, one less out there. It was sadness. It was a celebration of this, like, this guy got away with, he got out of the custody of the U.S., he got the best of him. He made it this far. So, like, he was buried with a celebration. There's going to be corridos made out of him, folk songs. This guy's going to be remembered. We don't have Spider-Man down there. We don't have Captain America down there. We have El Chino Anthrax down there. That's what the kids are going to be That's the comic book the kids are going to read. You know, that's the hero they're going to emulate. So that's our normal down there in a lot of places, like Sinaloa, like Tijuana. That's what the youth will see, you know. That's what they're seeing. That's what they're. That's their normal, basically. I don't know. I don't know how else kind of to explain it.
No, I get you. It's like if you ever taste Vegemite, you'll want to throw up. But if you grow up with Vegemite, you love Vegemite.
Yeah,
that's your normal. To us, it's like it's unpalatable.
Yeah.
And if you grow up in, you know, Studio City, and you hear about this kind of behavior, like what the fuck? No, but. But that's not growing up with it.
Yeah. So we grew up. I was a big dork when I was grew up. So comic books. You know, I read comic books. I watched movies. That was my thing. Now kids in their 15s, 14-year-olds are watching cartel exploits on Instagram, seeing who killed who now and who's in charge of what territory. There's a Mexican bingo loteria game with the cartels. The narco loteria, so they're playing the loteria game, but with the narco guys on there. They're hearing these songs play, glorifying some of the exploits of some of these cartel guys, and that's what they grew up with. And now there is a sort of cultural validation when they see this stuff show up on Netflix, and now now it's a Netflix series. So now on the U.S. side, some of the Mexican Americans are growing up with that, and it's turning into a normal, culturally normal thing up here as well. So it's pretty interesting.
Well, let's talk. I want to tease this, but last time we were here, you were telling me about a lot of these pockets, I don't know, sleeper cells or whatever in the United States, you know, that it wasn't about people sneaking over. It was about people here getting established yeah. and not, you know, instead of smuggling drugs or guns or humans or whatever across the board, they just were here and established. So I want to talk about some of these cartels, and I want to talk about what's new with that and what more we can talk about with that so we can scare the crap out of you guys. First, I'll tell you about Mercari. Have stuff you don't use around the house, cluttering everything. Kids' baseball glove doesn't fit anymore. Dress only worn once. Old phone in a drawer. Mercari, it's a selling app. Makes it fast and easy to sell almost anything. Simply take a few pics, add a description to your items that is listed. Mercari will even email you a shipping label when it sells. No meetups, no hassle. 600,000 plus reviews. 4.8 star rating, by the way. That's about as good as it's going to get. And you don't have to throw the stuff out. I hate waste. I can't stand throwing stuff away. And you can get a little money back instead of throw it away. So don't let that stuff go to waste. Sell it, or you can also buy almost anything on Mercari. Find Mercari on the App Store at Mercari. That is Mercari. Mercari, the selling app. So let's talk about what they're doing in this country, how we're handling it, and are they doing it sort of in plain sight?
So from what I know, and a lot of the work that I did was at the border, so I got to see, you know, the interaction of people on the U.S. side and the Mexican side. So U.S. law enforcement doesn't trust fully or at all some of the law enforcement out there, so they don't share information. And some of the information that happens down there doesn't get shared with the U.S. So, you know, basically they're fighting two different wars in two different places, or the U.S. is basically outsourcing their drug war to Mexico. And they're just like, here's money, you know, do whatever you have to do down there. On the cartel side, they've been conscientiously moving their operations up into the U.S. for years. First through birthright citizenship. So El Chapo has kids that were born in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not uncommon for most of the people that work in some of these groups. It's a status symbol. I have my kid. I'm going to have him in the U.S. He's going to be born an American. He's going to have a passport. There's like a few famous cartel guys that have actual, you know, American citizenship that worked down in Mexico and would escape back to the safety of the U.S. You know, think about that. It used to be you have to you would escape to Mexico to hide.
Right.
That was the other way around.
There's a whole Christopher Cross song about riding like the wind. I think it got such a to make it to the border of Mexico, but he wasn't coming this way. He was going that way.
Well, again, it's like a reverse Uno card that's currently happening. The cartels are growing their operations in in the U.S. and they have been for a long while. Legalized pot in Mexico, legalized pot in California. Cartels moved up and started growing it illegally in public lands on the U.S. side, and the money that was being made from their illegally grown public land weed would not go back to Mexico; it would stay in the U.S. because they were established in the U.S.
So how would that work? We legalize it.
You legalize weed, so there's a market, open market, legal market for weed, so you can make your illegal weed and kind of, you know, try to go into that market as well.
And undercut and get paid?
So
because
the legal weed is
not regulated?
The legal weed is more expensive to grow, and it's, you know, so the illegal weed is being grown in a field somewhere. The costs to produce it are minimal. So you mix that out and you bring it back down into a place like this, and you could sell it to unsuspecting white people without realizing what they're buying.
So they think they're buying the stuff that's been regulated, so to speak.
Yeah, there's still a market for it, and also some of that weed just goes to places where it's not legal.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, you know, pot's kind of an interesting subject because we have kind of two entities in this country. We have the sort of hard right guys. They're like, beef up that border and get more guards over there and stop this shit from coming in. And then we have your harder left people, which is, well, just decriminalize everything and then there's going to be no market for it. But you're kind of saying, and then so what we did with weed in California is we went, okay, decriminalize weed, but the cartels are fluid.
Yeah.
And they're going to keep thinking of ways to, they're not going to snap a pencil and go, fuck it, no more money for us. They're going to morph into some version of legalized weed that gets them paid.
So you legalize weed in California, the hills that were usually covered in weed are now covered in poppy fields, and they switched to heroin laced with fentanyl in a lot of places.
That's in Mexico. And then out here, they'll just grow the weed.
Yeah, and out here, they'll just grow the weed, or they still cross Mexican weed for, I mean, it's still a market in some parts of central United States to illegal Mexican weed still gets crossed into the United States, which is pretty, you know, funny.
So it's this, I always kind of look at it like big business, you know, so California, heavily regulated, heavily taxed. So they go, here's what we're going to do. We're going to regulate, we're going to tax. And then the business, big business, could be Nissan, they moved, Toyota, they moved, you know, Apple goes out to China. You know, I mean, they're headquartered here, but they're doing all the manufacturing there. The film and TV industry goes to New Mexico, goes to Canada. They're fluid. They want to make money.
Yeah.
They're not good or bad. They just want to go make money. And so you think you're going to go, okay, here are the rules. And they go, okay, we heard that. Okay. Now here we're going to go figure out a way to get around that and make money.
Yeah. No, that's.
And big business does it theoretically legally, and they still do it. The cartels who have no legality at all, they get to do whatever the fuck they want. You're not going to stop them by making these proclamations.
And another thing people have to realize that some of these groups thrive within immigrant communities. And immigrant communities are notorious for not reporting things to the authorities when things happen because they're afraid.
Right. I always get in trouble for this, but I still mean it. I always meant it. I've always said it, which is like they always do this thing where it's like, oh, it's not the people, it's the government. It's not the people, it's the government. And I go, what part of Sweden is the government from? Like, they are the people that govern the people. There's certain – I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. The San Fernando Valley, when I was in the sixth grade, was pretty just lily white for the most part. And that's what it looked like. I don't mean aesthetically. That's the culture of it was that. at some point it became 65% Hispanic. And then when you started traveling around, go down Sherman Way, go down to Panorama City, go down to Roscoe or whatever, you start hearing the music, seeing the culture, seeing the lifestyle that I saw when I would go through Tijuana. And the answer would be, well, why would it be any different? Of course, that's what it is. That's the culture. So when the culture comes in, the culture takes over. And you can say that's good or that's bad, but it's accurate. It's what Germans would do if a bunch of Germans moved in. There'd be a bunch of schnitzel places and sauerkraut places and a bunch of Porsche repair places.
I'm an immigrant. Like, I'm from Mexico. I went through the process legally. And the first thing I did was they asked me when I was doing my process if I could speak English. I was like, yeah, I'm speaking English right now. Oh, okay. So they have things set up at the start so you don't assimilate. So most things are set up so you don't assimilate. You go through a process and you go out and move wherever you're going to move in the U.S. And you usually there's no push or effort done by any sort of the powers that be to make people try and assimilate, basically. I don't mean forget where you're from, you know, forget your culture, but like, you know, the first part of my American experience was in California, and I got all of the bad advice from fellow Mexicans that had already made that trip. You know, you can get some government money through here. You don't have to pay for this. This is how you do it over here. This is the hack you do to move over here. And I was like, well, you know, I want to start my business. I want to do this. You know, I'm going to pay taxes for this. Pay tax. No, you're doing it wrong. So you have these groups of people that you'll give you all the, you know, depending on your side of the equation, right or wrong advice.
Well, the assimilation, it's so insidious to me, because I could remember when there would be some ordinance or some bill would come down the pike and they'd say, we should teach English only in schools. These kids got to learn English. And then everyone would be called racist for doing that.
I think the problem with that, it goes twofold. If I come here to the U.S., I want to have success. I want to be able to provide a very beautiful future for my family. I have to let go of some of the stuff that I'm running from in Mexico. Some of the stuff I'm running from in Mexico is people don't obey those small rules. Hey, there's building codes here. I don't care. I'm going to make the roof out of my house out of a tarp. Why? Right. Because that's what I want. I can do that if I want to. I don't want to put my kid to school. You know, I'm going to just leave him home. You know,
right.
Those types of things are the things you flee. And now you come here and like.
That's why everyone thinks I'm a racist dick. But I always go, you left that shit.
I
come here and do things our way, and it doesn't mean you're abandoning your culture.
Anybody that says that's racist, I'll gladly put him in a car with me, and I'll drive down to eastern part of Tijuana and see how people live down there, and see why people are desperate to find a better life for themselves and their family. That's not racist. That is an assumption of the reality that people are escaping. I've had people call me out on being, you know, racist or whatever, sellout or, you know,
Uncle Tom Bien.
Yeah, cool. I work down there. I live down there. I have family still down there. I still go down there. I still do work trying to help people down there. Anybody that says that it hasn't been down there, actually done work down there, spend a night down there. Spend the night down there where you can't trust the cops. There's no 911. People can roll down into your driveway, peek in, see if you have any cute daughters. They take to a party, and then you will never see them again. People have their sons abducted, and the cops don't know where they are. Nobody knows where they are. There's no help. There's just desperation. There's not even a grave, you know? That's what people flee. Now, they come over here, and they want to start a better life. They want to start look for a community where they can belong and do something better with their lives, and do something better, or have a future for their families. And I was just in downtown L.A. a few hours ago, and I'm from the third world. And under those overpasses on that 10, that's beyond third world right now, right? So you see some of those realities up here now.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, bum wars and fires and these guys are living on the overpass. Like, why doesn't there's the homeless problems in the U.S. compared to Mexico? Go down to Tijuana and see if you can find an overweight homeless person with a smartphone. I'll dare you. Double dare you.
Well, back to the culture part of it, which is I've been here long enough and I've seen pockets turn into Mexico. And it's the street vendors and it's everything, the businesses, the music, the culture, the whole thing. And now I start thinking to myself, well, the joke's kind of on you because you came over here to start to do something, but you don't speak English. You're living in a pocket.
A bubble,
a pocket of what you left. Now, the crime isn't as bad and the other negatives aren't as bad, but there's still some more of it. And if you learn English, assimilate, spread your horizons out a little with the culture, then you could have all the things that you came here to get in the first place. And the politicians aren't helping because they're saying, how dare you tell those people to do that? Well, that's what's best for those people.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is. I'll just say what helped me out. When I came up here, I had amazing people around me that helped me through the process, not just my family, but also people that, you know, one of my best friends, and I consider him like a teacher, service member. He's a Navy SEAL reservist, Dan. When I came up here, it's like these are the rules. You should read up. Here's a small copy of the Constitution. You know, that's a pretty good thing to read. You know, mm-hmm. This is the history of the country you're in. These are the rights. You know, this is how you should be. And if you don't turn on politics, politics will turn on you. So all the things that I needed to kind of start in my process of becoming an American, which is something I've never taken for granted. I always want to earn it every day. I just want to earn it somehow. I went into that experience with people guiding me towards where I had to be, and not people. You're here. Awesome. Sit down. Just sign up for the check that's going to get here every few months. These are the benefits you get, and you're fine. Just chill out. Just ride it. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
It creates a permanent underclass, and it creates it with Mexican people, black people, white people. It creates it with anybody. If you just go sit down, wait for that check, do not worry about going out there and working overtime or weekends or getting it done, then it'll create it. It's not really about your nationality. It's about if you get free shit, your shit will get fucked up. I've seen it. I come from it. I understand it clearly. And the people who get the free shit, ironically, are the most angry people because it hobbles you and it ruins your ability to go. All you have, and that's all this country is you have the freedom to go out and make some hay while the sun shines, or you can fuck up and be a failure, but it'll be up to you.
Yeah, for opportunities, again, people that complain about this country, hop on a magic carpet ride. I'll take you down to some of these places so you can see what it's like in other places where there's no hope in some of these environments for any better future. And, again, I get called out for saying things like this, like, hey, Ed, that's pretty good English you speak. Yeah, I work on it. Why? Because I want to learn how to speak English, and I just want to half-ass things because that's not how I roll, right? Hey, Ed, you talk about these issues, and why are you talking about these issues? And aren't you afraid that you're talking about too many details about what's happening with the cartels? Yeah, but I feel responsibility that to the people that are still down there to make things better, and I think awareness is going to help that out, right?
Well, let's I want to talk, take a deep dive into the cartels. We need to take a quick break. Ed Calderon is with us. Edsmanifesto.com is the website. Quick break. Back with Ed. Cartel dive right after this.
The Corolla newsletter is getting it on. Every week, we give you exclusive content from Adam and the gang. Stories from the week that was, weekly giveaways, and now, when you sign up for the Corolla newsletter, you'll get a free chapter of Adam's upcoming book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. So what are you waiting for? Sign up to get your free chapter and more at CorollaNewsletter.com.
So, Ed Calderon, the cartels, ever-evolving in a way smarter than any politician or sort of government member could be, because they're like, I don't know, alley cats or something that just know all the cracks and crevices. You can never capture them. What can we do? What does the current administration of Mexico think about our current administration and vice versa? And can we ever come together on something? And here's a bizarre question, but what about outside administrations? Canada, do they weigh in at all? Why is it always sort of U.S.-Mexico? I know we share a border, but I mean, it's always like U.S.-Mexico. Are there any other countries involved?
So the symbiotic relationship between U.S. and Mexico, again, I can include myself because I pay taxes up here. Ouch. Our taxes pay for the drug war in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Through called El Plan Mérida, the Mérida Accords. Basically, the U.S. has outsourced the drug war to Mexico for the past over almost two decades now, and things like the equipment they use, the training they get, the cars they use, the firearms they get, all that is paid by U.S. tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so. It's in their best interest of the companies down there supplying all that to keep it going. That's one thing. So there's a symbiotic relationship with money. Now, in the time that I was down there working, like I got these H&K rifles that were pretty good, you know, German made, you know, came with a sight on them. They're pretty expensive. All these new vehicles, Ford Motor Company, Chevrolet, all these cars that we used to use down there. And it was like, hey, can we get some Nissan, different ones that we – no, Ford Motor Company or Chevrolet. Those are the only ones you can get. Why? Oh, there's certain stipulations. That's what you have to get. Oh, okay. So there's a whole economy around that war and a whole symbiotic – and if you shut that money off, well, people are going to – like, why is the money off? Like, what's going on, right? And I've never saw any sort of accountability on the Mexican side to where that money goes and how it's spent. And also, you have been sending down money consistently for the past, again, more than a decade. And things have been getting worse, not better. So right. if I were, you know, an investor investing in a company to make money, and every year it's, you know, they're making less and less money, or it's becoming more and more violent, then I have to question my, you know, investment.
Right.
But it doesn't seem to be the case. Now, as far as the relationship between the current administration in Mexico and the current administration in the U.S., it's a live and let live type situation right now. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any sort of combined effort to go after the cartels that I can see or that anybody can see outside of, you know, a few high-level arrests that are made and a lot of big deals made out of them.
What would happen if Trump said, like, well, we're pulling out of the WHO, or we're pulling out of NATO, or we're pulling out of funding for Mexico.
No more money for the cartel.
No more money. You guys are on your own.
I think the reality of the problem would hit Mexico a bit harder. So now you have a despondent police force that's not going to get the funds that they were accustomed to. They're going to get the rundown vehicles, and they're going to start not being able to patrol that much. They're going to have to find their own funds for it. So they're going to be more specific and more interested in how that money gets spent internally. So I think there's going to be more of an effort done for that money to be spent in a smart way and where those resources get allocated, I think.
Do you think that would be a good idea?
I think that would be an amazing idea if somebody actually did that.
Why is it never on the table, or is it on the table?
Because American companies actually live off it as well.
So no senator is going to bring it up. No congressman is going to bring it up.
Every Mexican cop wears the same brand of uniform, and it's a specific tactical brand that sells every single uniform that every cop in Mexico wears because of that international accord. So there's people making money on the U.S. side by the piles, you know. So that there's interest in that as well, right, which rarely gets talked about, but it's also the case.
So there's too much money on our side for anybody.
There's a lot of people making money off it.
And our government to say we're going to put an end to this.
There's a lot of people making money off it.
And it's kind of weird. I don't think the American people think about it that much.
They should. They should question where their money goes to. Like, I question it. And I got the first time I paid taxes, like, well, now I can complain about it, right?
Right.
I used to be on the receiving end of some of that money. So I remember one time we had firearms issued to all of us, and they were German. So people out there that are gun nuts, H&K G36s, polymer space rifles from – they looked like they were from space. Like, I saw them, like, it's a space rifle. So they got all these expensive rifles. So somebody made a lot of money with that arms purchase, with that firearms purchase, not in Mexico. And we got all those rifles. And immediately after that, somebody else put a contract in and they wanted to change those to another brand.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, they were trying to take, you're enjoying these too much. Give me, these are the new ones. Use these ones now. So somebody was making loads of money just off the firearms we were using.
Right.
So again, there's a symbiotic relationship. Not just Mexico puts drugs into the U.S. and feeds a population of people that are addicted to it, but also the Mexican government is addicted to the money that gets put into the problem by the U.S. for it to be utilized in things like national security, policing Mexico, and working against these cartels, and consistently each year it gets worse and the problem gets bigger. So something is wrong
right.
with this.
And the cartels are just expanding and their reach is broadening. And we've talked about them kind of wanting to fly under the radar a little bit. It doesn't behoove them to make a lot of noise or do a lot of, like, when they shot up that Suburban with the, oh God, what?
The Mormon family in Sonora.
Yeah, that they were Mormons, I guess.
But again, you know, I can't, the fact that they're Mormons was said a lot in the media. They were Americans.
Right.
They
so
were.
We don't really look at Mormons as Americans.
I don't know.
Utah.
So,
yeah.
The kids, babies, women, American babies, kids, and women were killed in the desert in Sonora by the cartels, and nothing realistically happened after
Well,
that.
You know, it's an interesting thought, which is our media is fucked up, and our media is right now, if you called it the Wuhan virus, they would be more angry at you than they would for China for releasing the virus and devastating the economy and health of the world. So their priorities are fucked up. So when they're sort of anti-religion, which is I'm not sure where that comes from. They're not big fans of religion, and they see Utah as this kind of weird white person. They don't like white people. And they don't like religion. So strike one and strike two if you're in Utah. So they also have this theme, which is white people oppress brown people. That's the theme. So if a black cop shoots a white teenager, that's not news. Obviously, if a white cop shoots a black teenager, that's a huge story. That's how they roll. And if people don't believe me, you can't think of all the examples. I work with Mark Garagos. He represents a lot of those white kids who get gunned down by cops of any color. And you don't know the story because you've never seen the story because CNN doesn't report the story because that's not part of their theme. So here you have religious people, white people, extra white people from Utah who are over there, and they were killed by brown people, which doesn't really fit a theme. And people are listening and going, Well, CNN reported it and whatever reported. It's like, yes, they did. They didn't turn it into Ferguson.
So the perspective that I had from that, so I knew people of that, the LeBaron family, that I knew them back from the time where they were basically, they have these communities in Chihuahua and Sonora where they, long story, I'm not a religious expert. People can do whatever they want. They believe whatever they want. They have these communities there. They wanted to live very Mormon, their Mormon lives there. Some Mormons say they weren't Mormon. They're not their type of Mormon. I don't know. The thing is that these guys lived in communities, and their communities were paradises in the middle of these cartel, you know, distraught places, right? The first time they came to my attention was that they set up a legitimate defense against some of these cartels that start to harass their communities. Cut forward years later, kept in contact with some of them. Some of them, you know, one of them emailed me the news of that happening. This hadn't made national news yet. Nobody was talking about it, really. So I posted it on my Instagram account. A group of Americans were just killed in the desert. They're part of the Mormon community. That's, to me, that was secondary. You know, they're part of the Mormon community that lives in Mexico, but they're Americans. And this happened. It's horrible. Like, you know, people should focus on this. These people are Americans. They're women. They're children that were killed in the desert by a cartel group. You know, there's some sort of reaction has to happen. And as soon as you start seeing in the news cycle, weird Mormon stuff to happen in their family. Right. I don't know what they were doing down there. So they're probably up to something shady. You know, what they were doing in Mexico, they're probably in the drug trade. So you start seeing all these things. So like, hey, forget the fact that they're Americans. They're Mormon. They were doing something shady down there. Why were they there?
Right.
You know, they were saying that they were doing something shady there. These were two women, babies, and babies in vehicles that made a horribly wrong turn and wrong decision to go down this road. They were on their way to this wedding. And they, case of horrible mistaken identity, that's what I managed to, you know, come up with as far as an explanation after seeing all the details around it. And the way you saw it on the media, weird Mexican Mormon cult killed in the desert.
Yeah, I know. We completely glossed over the American part. We kept doing the Mormon part. And again, there's a theme, and the theme is Whitey kills black people and Whitey kills brown people. And if that's not really part of it, if you flip the script on that, they'll give it a little bit of ink, but it's not really in their theme. And it's sad. It's weirdly not the way anyone should go about reporting the news.
In Mexico, you can have somebody get shot 100 times in the middle of the street. Everybody sees it. It doesn't show up on the news, and that's normal.
Really?
Yeah, there's something. You know, people bury stuff down there. It's common.
How does the news work there?
Well, if you report anything, there's a lot of reporters get killed and abducted in Mexico, so there's fear, right? But you would think, you know, there's a lot of fake news down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then you move up here and you're like, wow, this is weird, fake news is happening up here too. Like really, really fake news is happening up here too. Or twisted information is happening up here.
Yeah,
too.
We just take certain stories and spin them one way or the other, sort of depending on whose side we're on.
Case in point, El Chapo.
Mm-hmm.
All over your media, when El Chapo was extradited, when El Chapo was caught, he was the head of the Sinaloa cartel. This is the bad guy. This is the guy. This is the Mexican Osama bin Laden. This is the guy we've been after for all these years. El Chapo is probably number two, number three in the Sinaloa cartel and always has been. He's not the head of the Sinaloa cartel.
Who's the head?
Omayo Zambada, who's a old school cartel guy that came out of that generation from the 70s and 80s that were the first kind of guys that got into the drug trade. He lived in LA for a while. You know, he set up all the connections as far as distribution on this side, long time guy.
Is he catchable if we wanted to?
He is a very discreet man. He's a very dangerous man. He is a man that has connections that go all the way back to the 80s. There's rumors that he's a CIA guy, asset. You know, there's all sorts of rumors around this individual. And there's rumors of basically the U.S. betting on that cartel. So we can't keep control of all of these cartels, so we're just going to support this one. So keep us informed if somebody tries to put a nuke through the border or something. Yeah, we'll keep you informed. That's kind of like the going theory that people down there have as far as how the U.S. has – he's basically remained kind of untouched or not on anybody's radar till recently when El Chapo's trial kind of brought his name up more and more to the surface, right?
What do you know about Fast and Furious?
I was shot at with some of those guns, so I know a little bit about that.
Oh, I'll pick the right guy to talk to.
Yeah. So
what were we trying to do with that? We're trying to bring the guns over and then sort of trace the guns?
I don't know about the U.S. side, but I will tell you what the perspective was on my side. A single cartel, the Sinaloa cartel, started having all these weird specific guns all of a sudden in their hands. One of the guns that they started to have was the P90s and FN57s as pistols that have a very high velocity round that goes through soft body armor, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a very specific kind of pistol.
We're looking at one now.
Yeah, those they're called cop killers in some places. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of, you know, depending on the round and the specific load in the round, that thing can go through body armor. I found two of those lying next to the car that was shot up. A former agent that I work with got killed outside of his house with his wife and their daughter.
Why did he? His wife, his daughter. How old was his daughter?
His daughter was five at that moment. Didn't die. Lost her arm, and they killed the agent and the wife. He could have been on the take. He could have been doing whatever the reasoning was. He got killed with two of those guns. I've never seen them, not even in a movie. I don't know.
They're
what they
very
were.
Modern and different looking. And they literally just left the guns?
Yeah, drop them.
All right.
It's not you don't keep you don't keep them. I've heard once a cartel guy. High level cartel guys say a sicario, basically a murderer, said, "You know, weapons are like condoms. You fuck with them once, and you throw them away."
So they don't want to be caught with them on them.
No.
So they dropped us. So you show up.
We show up. We see them. I thought those are interesting. Take pictures of them. They get put into.
Is this guy a friend of yours?
Yeah, he was somebody that I came up with. Yeah, he was a friend of mine. I knew, I went to birthday parties and stuff like that at his house.
Don't know why he was executed?
Some of these things you don't know. Did he piss somebody off when he was working? Did he choke out the wrong guy during work?
And why did they kill the wife and the kid too?
There's no rules anymore down there. That's old school. You know,
is it sending a message?
It used to be no women, no children type thing, but that's gone.
Really?
You know, cartel hit squads. They would call them the Anthrax. The nickname was the Anthrax Squad because they would kill everything. You know,
right.
No industry.
Anthrax, right?
So these started showing up. Barrett 50 caliber rifles started showing up, like in the box with everything in the box. Like somebody walked into a store somewhere in Texas, and these started showing up on the Mexican side. AR-15s with Punisher skulls on them and weird American accessories on them.
So it felt queer in a non-sexual way. It felt weird to you.
It felt
your job at that time. You're how old and what's your job?
I'm in mid-20s. I'm part of the boom groups, basically a combined operational group where police, military, and a federal judge going around places, and if we didn't have a warrant to go into a property or a judge's order, he would write it on the spot and we would go into places. So we were very actively working against criminal groups in the environment they were working in.
So it'd be as if I would work in some neighborhood and I'm used to seeing the same kind of old cars out front, and all of a sudden I start seeing some brand new Mercedes out front, and it seems weird to me, right?
It wasn't uncommon to see an Uzi, an AR-15, just, you know, AK-47, you know? And then all of a sudden we start seeing these weird, you know, space pistols and 50 cal Barretts being shot at with 50 cals.
Right.
If you've ever been shot at with one of those Barretts, you can hear the air disturbance going over your head. They were shooting – we were trying to move around in armored vehicles to keep some of our directives, our bosses safe. So they would focus on shooting at us with those 50 cals to try to pierce the armor mm-hmm. on these vehicles. So you saw up – so basically the arms race was
– right.
Just was raised all of a sudden on us.
So you're noticing something's going on, but you're not sure where those guns are coming from?
Yeah, we were. I was bit way below my, you know, pay grade. I was like, I didn't know what was going on. I learned about it after the. I learned about it from those hearings on CNN. You know, and
so we were going to give it to the Sinaloa cartel and then try to track them?
What I know is that that operation was during the almost at the tail end of the George Bush the Bush administration. Going into the Obama administration, it was something that was actively done. You were letting guns being bought in straw purchases by gun runners walk across the border and being sold to cartel guys to track where they would go. That, which makes absolutely no sense to me in any way, shape, or form.
And when they say track, and I don't know everything about the Fast and Furious, I know not a whole lot came of it. And I think Eric Holder was the attorney general at the time, and I think the
first time that Obama invoked his privilege was because of the Fast and Furious. So he kept those things sealed as far as that, and
right.
It was related to that whole Fast and the Furious. So that's very telling on as an outsider,
right?
And you know, I still to this day thinking, you know, there was. He knew about these things happening. It became a scandal when one of those guns was used to kill a U.S. law enforcement agent in Mexico.
Right. How could it go any other way? But did they literally put little tracking devices in the guns?
The going thing is that some of the bullets had tracking devices, that some of the guns had tracking devices, GPS type tracking devices, but no arrests were made that I know of. That have been made public because of those traffic guns. No high-level cartels guys were put in jail. No international gun trafficker kingpin was arrested. All that happened on my side was we kept finding them around murder scenes and people being shot at with 50 cals in their vehicles and just seeing the carnage some of those rounds do to people. And we would just kept finding them. We would kept finding them, put them in the system, and all of a sudden they would be flagged. These guns are of interest to the U.S. government for some reason, so let's send them off that way. And we kept finding them, and they're still finding them. You know, they're still finding them out there.
I'd love to get to the fucking bottom of that one of these days. But so cartels, U.S., and China, and Mexico – China's back on everyone's radar now. We talked a little about China running labs. Now we're back to sort of Wuhan. But, I mean, Mexico doesn't have the experience running those kind of high-level labs that the Chinese do.
They do.
Or setting them up.
There have been fentanyl labs found in Mexico, and all of them have basically copy-paste elements to them. So you could see Chinese basically information advisors coming in and basically setting them up for him. Last time I was on here, I talked a little bit about it, and I got a lot of, it's not the Chinese government. It's the triads. It's the criminal Chinese. Those people saying that, been watching too many Big Trouble in Little China movies. There's no criminal underworld in China. China is in control of everything from top to bottom. Even the shady stuff that happens in China, Chinese state has a hand in it. Telling thing that happened recently. Fentanyl production and fentanyl, getting into Mexico stopped because of the Chinese shutdown, right?
Right.
So cartels were starved for that.
Interesting.
So prices raised. So the first people that opened up the ports of entry for Chinese trade was the U.S. So you had fentanyl being somehow smuggled into the U.S. and then smuggled into Mexico that was caught when this was happening.
So you're smuggling fentanyl into Mexico.
From the U.S.
port,
because the ports are closed down there, so there's nothing coming from China into Mexico.
Is it because Mexico needs to process it?
It needs to infuse its heroin with it.
Mm-hmm. So it had to go over there, and we caught it.
Yeah. So no, the Mexican officials caught this car with a bunch of fentanyl in it. A lot of it. I mean, a lot of it. So that shows you a few things. Production stops and starts because of the epidemic in China.
Mm-hmm.
So it stops and starts because the government says so. So they opened back up so fentanyl can go out again. The government said it. It wasn't like a criminal group's like, yeah, the government said it's okay now, so we can ship things out now.
Right. So what you're kind of saying is
there's an official government sanctioned something happens out there in China where they say, yeah, send some fentanyl over. Just keep this going. Keep this long war of drug attrition against the Americans that they don't even know they're in going.
Yeah. So in Mexico, the cartels aren't in charge of the government, but the government isn't in charge of the cartels either. And they're going to have to sneak over the border or tunnel or do whatever they're going to do, put it welded into gas tanks or whatever it is. But in China, that's not the relationship. The government is in charge. And if they shut it off or they say no, it's as if Mexico had the power to say, we're shutting the border, no more fentanyl going over to the United States. They couldn't do that.
You see this, the Hong Kong protesters were targeted by the so-called triads in the environment where they were, the gangsters were targeting the Hong Kong protesters because they're proxies for the Chinese government. You know, the government went at them full on from the bottom up.
Right.
So this whole concept of illegal precursors and fentanyl being smuggled from China into Mexico, and there's no shady criminal group that's independent from the government in China doing it.
Right.
It's Chinese state doing it. It has to be.
And we're so fucking gullible and stupid that all we have to do is have the president blame China and then all our news agencies defend China. Or all we have to do is have, you know, the Houston Rockets. Was it the Houston Rockets or San Antonio Spurs guy? Like the GM, say, stands with Hong Kong and all of LeBron James and Steve Kerr and all those guys got to fucking school him up. It's so insane how fucking malleable these people are. That's the crazy part.
I mean, to me, by having that experience down there, now being up here, seeing the whole problem, you are in a war with China that has been going on.
Sorry, the Rockets. Yeah, Daryl Morey. Sorry, the Rockets.
China's in a war with you that's been going on for a long time. Economic warfare. You know, there's no more standing army against standing army. You're not going to exchange nukes, but they're going to degrade you from afar for a long time in some way, shape, or form, economically, socially.
Well, I'm wondering if there's this new sort of chaos factor, which is this. So as long as you keep the fentanyl going here and everyone's strung out and fucked up and we're battling these endless wars, they can be freed up to knock off Big Bertha golf clubs and Schwinn bikes and do whatever they can be free to do whatever they want to do. And here's the thing that's interesting about this country and how fucking dumb our news media is. At a certain point, early on, we had found out that the Russians and the Russians' hacking of the election and this and that was not about pro-Hillary or pro-Trump. It was mainly stuff about Black Lives Matters and this group going against that group to cause division, to cause chaos. I mean, you could imagine it'd be so easy to win a war if the people you're fighting were fighting each other. Right. And spending all their energy doing it. And it was about two years ago where the news outlets went, you know, it turns out there was only a couple of ones that were pro Hillary or anti Trump or whatever. But most of the stuff the Russians did was to try to get us to infight about cultural things, race things, things of that nature. We knew it. We found it out. We reported it. And then we went right back to fighting about this shit they were trying to get us to fight about.
Yeah. I mean, you have a big stick. You spend more on your military than any other country by far. And they're not going to fight a war with you one-on-one like that. They're going to find ways of doing it, you know, economically, asymmetrically, culturally, a war of ideas through, you know, I think part of that war is the current epidemic of fentanyl and meth precursors and things that going into Mexico. And that's just part of the whole new front line that they're opening up against the United States. That's my opinion as far as how I see it. And you can see people are making money. The first things that were started to be smuggled back into Mexico after the whole shutdown wasn't the precursors to make meth. It wasn't they gave a priority to the fentanyl. That's right. The priority. So that there's a clear interest for that thing to keep going, you know?
Well, we're plumb out of time, but I feel like you can just come back every couple of months and we can just sort of pick up where we left off, because it's kind of macabre, but it's fascinating at the same time. And I just wish there was some light at the end of the tunnel here, but it doesn't sound that way. Who do they want? Last question. Who would Mexico like? Would they like Trump or Biden?
They like Trump. Most Mexicans are conservative. Most Mexicans get a kick out of, you know, the whole.
Who would the Mexican government like to see?
Trump.
Who would the cartels like to see?
Not Trump.
Huh. But the government, although they're pretty progressive and left-leaning, would like to see Trump.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because they're already established this relationship coming off the migrant caravan thing, and how basically Mexico said, yeah, we'll build a big wall on our southern border. Mexico did that, you know. All this talk about anti-wall building from the Mexicans in the U.S. and Mexico is building a big wall on their southern border.
Oh, they're building a big wall on their southern border to block Central America.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's a right. clear interest to keep that going on both sides.
Well, edsmanifesto.com is where you go. Twitter and Instagram, by the way, Ed's Manifesto as well, Ed Calderon. Me, live events coming up, Nashville, June 12th and 13th. Just go to adamcarolla.com for all your information. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla. For Jimmy and Cousin Sal and Ed Calderon saying, mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Watch this broadcast at youtube.com/Adam Carolla and pre-order Adam's book. I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere June 16th. Get the links to pre-order at adamcarolla.com.